Welcome to Ever-Changing Technology, where we explore the innovations shaping our world and how they impact our lives. I'm your host, Jim Bradfield. Today, we're joined by Dr. Sean Hamilton, a seasoned business technology executive with over 30 years of leadership experience in both government and Fortune 500 companies, including the Department of Health and Human Services, Daimler-Benz AG, and Deutsche Telekom AG, just to name a few. And he's also worked with me for several years as well. Dr. Sean founded a successful Austin-based software and cybersecurity firm, and he's led international startup incubation initiatives, has expertise in enterprise operations, AI, cloud infrastructure, strategic partnerships, and, by the way, he was a former military intelligence officer with service across multiple global theaters. So he's also a medical doctor. Dr. Sean, welcome to the show, man.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing today?
Great. So today we'll explore how AI and machine learning are transforming financial technology or fintech and what that means for you. Now, one of the things that we have is we are having AI and machine learning reshaping how people save, spend, invest, protect their money, and that kind of thing. But along with efficiency and innovation comes a challenge of maintaining trust, security, and fairness. So, and Dr. Sean, there seems to be lots of confusion surrounding AI and machine learning. Can you please clarify for our viewers the five categories of AI that we discussed previously?
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate the question because there is a lot of confusion. And when people start to do their own research, they end up saying, well, what is it? You know, what is this AI thing? I thought it was just machine learning. But really, it breaks down into five categories. And so AI is the overarching category for all of these. Machine learning, then there is deep learning, which works kind of like your brain. There is natural language processing. There is vision, which means it can read images. And then there is robotics. And all of those are eventually going to work hand in glove together in the future.
Awesome. Okay. So now that we've got that kind of straightened out, so how are AI and machine learning currently transforming the way people manage their money?
That's a really great question, because when you think about it, it's all these different systems that we log into and assume that are safe and protected and are looking at our best interests. But a lot of things are also pretty disparate, which means that they're in different places and they have different logins and different systems. So one thing that is happening, and I can give you a perfect example with banking, is a check. We don't go to the bank anymore and deposit checks. We use our cell phone. We use our cell phone and it scans it in and says, okay, now you have this deposited in your checking account, which is a great convenience. But also from the security perspective, it's looking at that check to say, hey, bank that this is issued from, is this your check? And all of that's happening kind of behind the scenes. And AI is really helping with that. And as I said, it's one of those things that helps with the innovation. So that's a perfect example. And then there's also examples where I've worked with a current AI company called AR Sync, which stands for Accounts Receivables Synchronization. We'll just call it AR Sync. And what it does is it works with invoices. And one of the biggest challenges, of course, right now with a lot of businesses is keeping cash flow and making sure that cash is available. So anything that can take and look at mistakes or anything that happens on an invoice, and we've all been there, we get tired, we send them at night, and some things get transposed sometimes. And then that invoice is rejected because some of these companies are also using AI on their end saying, hey, is this invoice correct? So that's one of those things where you're looking at a complete workflow. And then going back to individual money, well, part of it is understanding all the different financial providers and understanding the different types of services that they're providing. And going back to the banks, banks have over 60 plus different services that they provide. So can you imagine walking into a bank and they give you this litany of all the different services and you say, no, I'm not interested in that. No, keep going. That would be kind of monotonous, right? So in essence, they're using AI to understand a little bit more of our, you know, our buyer history, things that are happening within our lives, to then try to target those specific services based on kind of a just-in-time approach, and then provide those directly to the customer.
Yeah, so that's not just banks then. It's pretty much everything. Yes. Anybody can use it, right? That's correct. Pretty much what we're talking about.
Correct.
In that case, how does the AI reduce the fraud and improve security for everyday customers? How can they feel secure with this?
And I already mentioned that. For instance, just the check example. Yeah. We're checking to make sure that it's really a check from a financial institution, that it's valid. It does that in seconds. But on top of that, what it does is it says, hey, is this really somebody that we've dealt with before? Do we recognize that cell phone that scanned that check into the system? So there's different fail safes that are happening. And you've probably gotten these notifications because we all travel, and I know you travel extensively. It says, hey, did you make this purchase? So that's also part of AI looking at things saying, hey, this doesn't fit what normal buyer history that this individual has. It's out of the ordinary. So let me just go ahead and check in with them.
Right. Okay. And so, you know, that's the other kind of thing that we were talking about, which is the security part of it. And we'll talk about that later on a different segment, on the next segment. But one of the things that we also talked about was, you know, is there a risk of bias in the AI-driven financial things? You know, how can companies address that?
That's another great question. So part of it is to understand that you have a large enough sample. So I'm going to get a little scientific on you and try to keep it that way. But sometimes what you have to do is you have to look at all the data inside of your sample and say, is it large enough? Is it a large enough population to really represent what I'm trying to do? And for instance, in a bank, let's say it's a subset of a population that is new and emerging. Well, sometimes there's not enough data so to make decisions, and somebody could be biased based on that. Like, for instance, they're very young, like Gen Z, and they don't have a lot of purchase history. So in essence, it's okay, now let's take that into consideration. We use what's called weighting system, and we use the weighting system to try to offset some of that, as well as expanding sample.
Weighting system. Now that's kind of interesting. That's can you explain that a little bit more?
Absolutely. So basically what you're doing is you're using a weighting system, let's say 1 to 5. And because that population is probably going to be biased in the sense because there's not enough data. So what you do is you bump up their rating, like for instance, giving them a 3. And so now then you run that data and it's going to be more representative. A lot of times we used to say back in the day, we level the playing field, right? Similar to golf. So we use a weighting system to say, hey, this person goes from the black tees, this one goes from the white tees.
I like that. Yeah, I go from the tees in front of the women's tees. So. What do you see as the next big AI innovation that's going to change the fintech industry? What are you promoting there?
I think really consolidation of data, so that really people have an accurate representation of the type of customer that they have in front of them. So for the longest time, everything's been siloed. And so you yourself probably have multiple financial professionals that work with your money. And they don't really communicate with each other. So being able to create an ecosystem that which allows them to really communicate with each other as well as their customer base, to me, is really going to be a benefit for the industry, as well as being able to really look at the types of financial products and services and how to align them with the customer.
Okay. So, you know, again, what are you recommending that people are need to understand a little bit better? We talked about that there's some confusion and misunderstanding about what the different categories are and what's happening, but what do you recommend that people trying to get into the industry really need to understand about it?
Honestly, they really have to pick a lane right now and really become an expert in one or the other, because eventually you will have convergence, but you have to look at it from what are you trying to achieve? And right now, all the rage, of course, is machine learning with large language models. And of course, we're used to chat and some of those other services. And I think that too often, that's kind of where we get stuck, is thinking only kind of in that lane.
You know, and where do people actually go to understand that kind of thing? Do they, you get that in college? You get that online? Where are they looking to understand some of this stuff?
There's a lot of college. I would say different universities provide services for data scientists. There's data engineers. There's different individuals too that kind of make up a team. But in essence, a lot of it is what I'm seeing is self-taught. They can go directly online and start learning and testing out models. So it's a very unique situation right now where you can just pull up a model and start playing with it and really learning from doing.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, everybody is learning stuff online now that's just absolutely remarkable and amazing. You know, it's my grandkids are even understanding these kind of things and talking to me about it, which is pretty amazing, you know.
Yes.
So up next, we're going to look at one of the most pressing issues in our digital age, cybersecurity, and how you can protect yourself. Dr. Sean. And we're back. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this is Ever-Changing Technology here on Now Media Television. Welcome back to Ever-Changing Technology. Loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of Ever-Changing Technology or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows. Now that's live or on demand anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming that's both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. So we're here with Dr. Sean Hamilton. In this segment, we're going to be focusing on cybersecurity, a topic that's more critical than ever. From phishing scams to sophisticated ransomware attacks and threats are constantly evolving. Dr. Sean, thanks for being on the show.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing today?
Great. So cyber threats can hit anyone, individuals, small business, large corporations, anyone. With the right awareness and strategies, you can dramatically lower your risk. So, Dr. Sean, what are the biggest cyber threats individuals and businesses should be watching for right now?
Well, I think you named them, you know, phishing and spear phishing, as well as ransomware, because they're the most costly. And those are going to be threats that are ever evolving. And if you're using more advanced technologies like AI, you have the ability to scan people's profiles, their media profiles, and gain a lot of different information. So when somebody does come with a phishing or a spear phishing is more targeted to an individual, that means that they have a lot of information about you that they're presenting to you. So everything seems very legitimate. They can turn around and pretend to be somebody else. And it's very difficult to discern what's really happening. It's getting to a point where it's kind of a leapfrog. Your cybersecurity professionals are trying to stay ahead of it, and your cyber criminals are trying to stay ahead of them.
Now, spear phishing, when we're talking about that, we're talking about specific individual targeting, right?
Yes, sir. They're basically, they have a lot of information, and they're coming in with a lot of information at once, and it all seems very legitimate. And that's, spear phishing attacks are very difficult because everything seemed legitimate, and it's really hard to just discern if there's just one little thing out of place, because one, that information is coming at you fairly quickly, and they're usually asking you to make a decision.
Yeah. And I've seen a lot of those in my days here. So there's a whole bunch more coming on. So, you know, how does the small business protect themselves without a huge security budget? We understand what a larger business is doing, but what does a small business guy do?
So first and foremost, multi-factor authentication is critical, because that can at least alert you to somebody attempting to breach one of your systems. And also at the same time, it's not all in one place. So if you have one, if they have one password, doesn't mean they have all the passwords. So multi-factor authentication is absolutely critical. The other thing is changing your passwords every 30 days. I know that a lot of people talk about quarterly, but now as fast as things are moving, you really have to change your password every 30 days. And then on top of that, I would state that for a small business, you need a cybersecurity plan. Just like you have to have a plan to take a vacation, you need a plan for what you're trying to protect, how are you going to protect it, and how much budget do you have to really allocate to that protection?
Yeah, so small business is going to be, you know, hard pressed to allocate a whole lot of budget to anything, I would think. You know, like is it human error? Is that what we typically see? That's the problem with people clicking on things that they shouldn't be? And, you know, and how can we train people to avoid that?
Oh boy, we've been trying that forever. Computer user agreements and all kinds of other things. But the reality is that initially, I think what, if you take away anything from this podcast, is absolutely don't click anything that seems out of sorts to you, and really verify it. For instance, it only takes a minute to make a phone call. So don't call the number that they list. Go to Google or go to another source and find the number, and then call the number that says, hey, are you asking me these questions? So really trust but verify. And also looking at it from the perspective of just be vigilant. Don't share your passwords with anybody. Don't share passwords even with family. And the reason is, it's not that you can't trust them. It's the fact that some of the systems that they may be logging into may be less than secure. And that's one way that hackers can get your information.
Okay. Now, you know, let's talk about how AI is changing the game for, you know, the criminals and cybersecurity experts trying to go stay a step ahead of them, which it seems like they would have to be a step behind maybe. But anyway, what's AI doing to help you out with that?
So AI is really helping to look through different systems simultaneously and understand exactly where it's coming from. Like, for instance, first and foremost, if it's coming from a foreign country, it's probably not the communication that you want. And then also at the same time, it's creating policies. It's creating dynamic policies. So these cyber criminals can't figure out the policies that quickly. And so it's changing dynamically. So that makes it a little difficult to even get back into the system if you were in the first place. And then your assumption is that they're probably somewhere in your system. So you just have to kind of keep things secure as possible, but also keeping your eyes and ears peeled for different things that are changing in your systems that could alert you to somebody that's unauthorized inside of the walls, so to speak.
Awesome. All right. Yeah, it just seems like it's just a never-ending game, right? I mean, that's just
cat and mouse.
Yeah. I mean, you're just dodging a fisherman, you know. I mean, that's a spear gun is shooting at you the whole time. So you know, what are the first three steps you'd recommend somebody take if they suspect a cyber breach?
Well, first of all, it depends if they're a company or an individual. Mm-hmm. If it's an individual, I would first and foremost change your passwords immediately, all of them. Okay. The second thing I would do is try to limit your exposure as far as what we call the threat surface for different applications. So things that you don't need, delete, get rid of, you know, anything that's coming in that's kind of not usable or really you don't use on a daily basis, it's good cyber hygiene. Then also at the same time, looking at it from let me figure out if I need to change other things in all the way to, you know, your information for identity theft. So that's individually. A company has a responsibility to inform its customers that there has been a breach, because you don't want to get sanctions or sued or anything like that. You want to make sure that you inform your customers quickly so that they can make changes. They can change their passwords and things like that. That helps a lot. The other thing is that don't try to handle it yourself. You need a cybersecurity professional. There's a whole list of things that they do to try to goat these individuals into giving them more information so they can figure out how best to combat them. And then the third thing is what we call a root cause analysis, is let's really go down deep and understand what happened. How did they get in? Where did our security controls fail?
Got it. Yeah. And, you know, that's, you know, how long ago did you work for the intelligence service?
Oh, I can't confirm or deny that.
Yeah. Okay. So that was quite a while ago. And, you know, but as it's going, you know, you guys are developing more and more and more security things to teach every one of us, right? I mean, that's kind of the idea, is yes, to develop all those things and then make sure that that gets taught to everybody else. Right. And I think that is really something everybody should be paying attention to, is what's being brought to you and given to you kind of on a platter. So like Sean said, you know, you can actually get on some online training and go take a look at all these different videos of these guys who are putting these things together for you. Right. Sean, I think that's a reasonable suggestion.
Oh, absolutely. And also at the same time, I would suggest that you really look at things from all different dimensions. I feel that people always think about their computer and never about their phone. There's more information on their phone than there is on their computer. Because think about it, that's how we communicate on a daily basis. And not just your personal information or company information, but anything that goes along with IP or intellectual property or intellectual capital. That's another thing too that you may not even realize is being stolen from your environment.
Yeah. So Dr. Sean, for viewers who want to learn more about your work and insights, where can they connect with you online?
So I'm on LinkedIn, and also you can email me directly at Sean@uxunlimited.co. I'm the CEO and chairman of the company. And so happy to have conversations, and, you know, we're all in this together. So anything that we can do to help increase security, I'm all in.
Awesome. So coming up, we're going to talk about how customer service is evolving in a digital first world. Thanks again, Sean. We'll talk to you in the next segment.
Thank you.
And we're back. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this is Ever-Changing Technology here on Now Media Television. And we're back with Dr. Sean Hamilton. And now we're going to shift gears to talk about customer service, a make or break factor for businesses in the digital age. It's a really big deal in our company, and I know it's a big deal for everything Sean's been working on too. Now, technology offers incredible tools for customer engagement, but balancing speed and the human touch remains a challenge. So Dr. Sean, in today's digital world, what makes customer service stand out?
I think for customer service is really an interesting concept, because we all talk about it, but the reality is sometimes we forget the simple things. And that is what you're talking about, the human touch, the, hey, I care, you're an important customer to me as a business or an individual. And really part of that is to capture what people say to you. And I feel that AI is a great medium for that, because they can communicate all kinds of different ways with you. And first and foremost, most customers expect that you do care about them, so you remember what they communicated with you and also what their concerns are, and to be able to get to address those concerns as quickly as possible. I don't think most people like to be placated, and a lot of these systems seem to do so, you know, with IVR and some of those voice recognition systems, and that frustrates a customer. And our goal is not to frustrate them, because we said customer service. So part of it is really to understand what their needs and wants are, and then to try to, as quickly as possible, address them.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a really good recommendation, man, I'll tell you, because I see a lot of customers frustrated in line, like at railcar agencies and things like that. You know, that's like one of the worst places ever. I don't know if you've been to an airport trying to rent a car, but, you know, if you're not one of their guys in one of their gold members or whatever, and you waiting there, you could be waiting an hour to rent a car. I mean, that's just ridiculous. You know, they got to be able to figure out ways to take care of that, I would think, right?
Absolutely. And you're tired, you're irritable. The plane ride wasn't that fun in the first place. So, you know, it just adds insult to injury.
Yeah. And in keeping with that now, you know, because all they do is it seems like people go on a break, you know, you're trying to rent a car. The reason I bring this up is because I was frustrated a couple of weeks ago at a big car rental agency at a big airport. And there were just people out the door, and they just kept taking breaks. You know, everybody was like, all right, whatever. You know, how do companies use technology to improve their customer experience like that without losing the human touch, you know, without making everybody just mad?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is to know your customer and to treat everybody equally, right? And what I mean by that is there's so many ways that you can create apps and things like that where they could self-check in, which would then allow for a lot of the overhead to be taken care of at a kiosk. And then you could scan in with the kiosk. And then if you have to get into line for the specifics because somebody has to read you some type of boilerplate information because of legal reasons, then it's a much quicker turnaround. The other thing is that if you fully automate with somebody's phone, because anymore your phone's like your key everywhere.
Right.
So you could in advance book the car, have everything put together, review all the documents, sign them, DocuSign them. Sorry, I used or VeriSign. And then all you have to do is there's a barcode on the car itself. You scan it with your phone and then you go. So no line.
See how easy that is, guys? Hello.
Exactly.
What's the biggest mistake now that people are making that pushes their customers away? Like for me, for example, standing in that doggone car line, that really angered me, you know, and they sent me a little note that said, what are you going to do? You know, hey, thanks. You know, give us a little bit of feedback. Oh, man, you can imagine the feedback I gave them. So what are the biggest mistakes that people are making?
First and foremost, not heeding the feedback. When a customer is upset and they are giving you information, that is gold. Instead, what we treat it as is we treat it as something, you know, less than we would want on our shoes. So the idea is that you really have to embrace that. If you say you are a customer service organization or customer success, even at a higher level, then you really have to embrace that feedback. And sometimes it's not fun, but you have to read through it, and AI can do that for you and create synopsis and then reach back out to that customer. Hey, sorry, it was a bad day. These individuals, you know, they hadn't had lunch. I know everybody saw them going and leaving at the time, but they really hadn't. They've been working, you know, long shift. Whatever the reason is, most people are extremely reasonable. If you talk to them and explain the situation and then say, you know what, on your next car rental, we're going to go ahead and give you a 10% or something, or we're going to give you a coupon towards a hotel stay. All of that goes a long way. And the thing that is so out of, I would say, fashion anymore is just to say you're sorry. Sorry. What else can I do? Because that disarms most people. Because what you're saying is I am a customer success organization and I accept the responsibility.
Well, you know, that's excellent. And I think I can actually write up a note for those guys and send that to them. So what? Tell me something about trends in customer service you think is going to shape the next several years going on. What's going on with all that, with AI?
That's a great question, too, because I think that it's a lot of language gap, you know, because we have incredible talent all over the world. And we're able, and really, we have this global village where we can tap, you know, all types of resources that really work with budgets, you know, for companies. But with that comes certain challenges, you know, language barriers, gaps, different expressions. And for me, AI is one of those things that can really help with that, as well as AI being multilingual, like, for instance, a chatbot. It can speak to the individual in their language, and thus a lot less confusion, frustration. And then also at the same time, AI can ride kind of right seat with you while you're talking to the customer. It can look things up. So while you have them on the phone or whatever, in a chat, you have a captured audience and you have the unique ability to really give them an exceptional experience. And in doing so, having AI do the heavy lifting behind the scenes and getting the answers to their questions just makes you look a lot more competent, makes you look like you really care. And it's somebody that anymore, if somebody came to me with that, I'm going to be a lifelong customer, because it's like why would I go anywhere else?
Exactly. You know, just, and it, and this company is really old, so you would think that they would know that by now, but you know, and just really quick before we end up, you know, my family runs farm implement dealerships in Southern Illinois, and they are using AI to help them with order systems. And it knows what their, you know, what things cost, what they're going to charge, what the rates are, what things should be done on all their systems. It's just absolutely amazing with it. And it allows them to actually service their customers so much better. It's just amazing. So,
yep.
In our final segment, we're going to explore innovations in healthcare and life sciences and how they're changing lives. Dr. Sean Hamilton, once again, thank you very much. We'll see you next segment. And we're back. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this is Ever-Changing Technology here on Now Media Television. Welcome back to Ever-Changing Technology. You loving what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of Ever-Changing Technology or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows that's live or on demand anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming. Now that's in both English and Spanish. You prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. So in our final segment, Dr. Sean Hamilton joins us to discuss the remarkable breakthroughs happening in healthcare and life sciences, from AI-driven diagnostics to next-generation treatments. Now, I should tell you that Dr. Hamilton, his doctorate, maybe he has more, but his doctorate is, he's a medical doctor. So he is absolutely up on this type of segment. So medical and life sciences technologies are advancing at incredible pace, but challenges, you know, in accessibility and affordability and adoption really remain. So Dr. Sean, what are some of the most exciting innovations happening right now in healthcare and life sciences?
Well, there's several really big things happening, especially the physician assistant AI. And that is for as the physician is looking at the patient, there again, the AI can kind of be doing some of the heavy lifting, what we like to call SCUT, and going through all these different articles and things like that to give the doctor the most current information. So first and foremost, what we need to understand is medical professionals and physicians especially are extremely busy. And sometimes they may not have the latest and greatest information on a particular disease or condition. And what AI helps do is really helps them fast track a lot of that, especially once they have a patient in front of them. And there can be algorithms that they can use to go through to ensure that, one, they didn't miss anything. We're all humans, and sometimes we make mistakes, we get tired. And one of the things that can happen is, especially if you've seen individuals with the flu and there's 31 of them with the flu, 32 means the person has the flu, right? It's kind of along the lines of we get into that mode. And one of the things that AI helps with is really kind of shake you out of that mode. And also be able to, we talked about vision AI, and that is to look through scans, look through x-rays, look through all this different information from the individual without having to put it up on a light chart to review it. You can then just go through and have AI scanning for things and early detection. So from the diagnostic perspective, that's absolutely critical, because if we get to things quickly, we can come up with a game plan and a treatment plan that is going to have the best outcomes for patients. And then, sorry, did you want
go ahead?
And then pharmaceuticals. So pharmaceuticals, one thing that we need to understand as humans is we all think that we're all the same. We're not. Everybody reacts differently to different things. And so when you can start to look at biomarkers for individuals and then target pharmaceuticals directly to those biomarkers, the outcomes are so much better. And the idea is that that's what we call precision medicine. And it will actually help the patient with quick diagnosis as well as prognosis and treatment, and also be able to create a plan to follow throughout.
Wow. I mean, you know, that's pretty amazing. It's kind of like, you know, Back to the Future kind of thing, right?
Yes.
I mean, this is amazing. I imagine you really wish you had this when you were practicing medicine.
Yes, absolutely. It would have made life so much easier, you know, instead of reading all these different books.
Because I still remember going to the doctor and having my doctor have this big medical journal and sitting here and kind of going, what is
called a PDR? Yeah, it's called a PDR, physician's desk reference. And but also as soon as it's printed, it's outdated. So when you think about that, and when information is changing constantly, we talked about the global village, and think about all these different innovations and discoveries that are happening all over the world, and being able to tap into that is a very unique environment, more especially for the medical field.
Yeah, it's just remarkable what's going on. But I mean, so you're still looking at challenges though in really making advanced healthcare solutions accessible to everyone. I mean, and what I mean everyone, I don't just mean people in the US. I'm talking about, you know, even more so people in underserved areas and other underserved countries. What challenges are there still for all those kinds of people?
I think there's really one of the biggest challenges is access to the internet, right? Is to really actually get to the information. So there's a lot of initiatives, especially in Africa, to use mobile nets to kind of give them that exposure and coverage so that they can access the information. But also at the same time, being able to tap into other professionals all over the world to ask them, to me, is unique. Think of a web conference meeting where you have multiple physicians going through, working through different analysis. And then at the same time,
yep,
one of those images is AI also coming up with ideas. That to me is where you're really converging that medical know-how.
Right. Now, one of the things that, you know, I know that you have worked a lot in Germany and you're fluent in German amongst several other languages. You know, are the Germans, they seem to be ahead of us in a heck of a lot of different things. Are they ahead of us in the healthcare systems and solutions and things like that as well?
I don't want to be lambasted by saying that. In some things they are, more especially in research. But the difference in the environment between Germany and the United States is Germany standardizes things. And so everything is like a DINA norm. And what that means is everybody has to have this kind of the same equipment, same standard across the board, which then makes communication easier. Also, digital records and things like that can easily be accessible. And of course, everybody's covered. So the insurance companies, they all communicate with each other, and they provide information to each other, where that's not very common here in the United States. So the sharing of information is absolutely critical. And then also at the same time, like I said, the access to some of these, you know, world-renowned surgeons and professionals is going to be able to change medicine, as well as really genomics and being able to target certain treatments directly towards somebody's, you know, biomarkers.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, I guess that's really how the field is changing, right? Are we going to look at standardizing and things like that here in the US, or, you know, to help treat the most serious diseases?
We tried. And some of these different, I would say, EMR systems and HMR systems, there's about 21 big ones and a bunch of small ones. So those, it starts really with that, is that communication, being able to get that information in and out, and then also protecting that information, you know, with HIPAA and HL7 and some of these other protocols is where we need to do a little bit of work. But ultimately, I look at things also from the discovery, and I'll be a little bit on the side of probably a lot of people gasping when we talk about COVID-19. So for me, using the example of the robotics, if you would have had robots actually doing the determination on some of those pathogens, then the pathogens wouldn't have leaked outside of a laboratory, right? So those are some of the things too that AI can help with, because AI is really responsible for things that are, you know, boring, monotonous, things that humans don't want to do, and also things that are extremely dangerous. And so working with some of those high-level pathogens where you have laboratories at, you know, levels 1 to 4, you know, those things can kill you as a human. But if you're a robot, you could work on neutralizing that particular pathogen and also generating the results in real time. So then AI will then publish that information worldwide and say, hey, this is how we neutralize this particular virus quickly, efficiently, and safely.
That's pretty awesome, man. I'll tell you, Dr. Sean, I really appreciate you coming on the show. This has been really valuable. So where can people follow your work and continue the conversation with you?
Sure. They can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I always accept connections and always and enjoy talking to people. They can communicate with me on email, Sean@uxunlimited.co, or they can, and, you know, just look for me in any particular segments. I do like to do some of these podcasts. So I'll definitely be on a TV or laptop near you soon.
Excellent, man. All right. So Dr. Sean Hamilton, thank you for sharing your expertise across so many vital topics today. You know, we've discussed the 5 categories of AI and, you know, trying to work out the mystery involved in those kind of things. We've talked about the AI and fintech, the state of AI and cybersecurity, evolution of AI and customer service, innovation shaping healthcare, especially. That's especially important in my view. Now, for our viewers, keep learning, keep asking questions, and stay informed in this ever-changing world of technology. I'm Jim Bradfield, and this has been Ever-Changing Technology on Now Media Television.